the Races with Steve Beck.
From Santa Anita Park, a really nice morning. Finally, everything comes together, and the timing was good because I was out of long sleeve shirts there at the dry cleaners, and I won't get them back until 4 o'clock today. So I have to wear a short sleeve shirt, and it's like 58 degrees. Hammer.
That's a traveling faux pas there, running out of shirts.
Hey, come on. It's 5 weeks I've been on the road, and
you're talking to a road warrior here, so I know how to, you know, you do what you got to do. And you got short sleeve shirt on. I've got a jacket on here. It's a little crisp.
It's not for this. And I run hot. I'm the first to admit it. Look at you! Look at you with the Alabama hat. Yes, you're.
How about that? Now I had it on earlier too, but the South has overtaken the West between Clemson and Alabama last night here in L.A. or yesterday afternoon here in L.A. We had some good games to watch. I went home and I was trying to go to bed. I couldn't.
You stayed up and watched.
I watched
Arizona give it.
That's the customary.
Ugh. They came out in the second half and I thought, oh, they're just going to take over, and they did take over. And then you know what? There was one flurry. I think it must have been, I want to say, 6 minutes into the second half when they had the chance to go up by 5 or 6, and they had three offensive rebounds, and they could not score. And I thought, if they lose, this was the moment that they could have really taken control. And sure enough, they couldn't hit a basket the last 8 minutes.
I think they went. I would listen to part of that game on the radio, or at the end of the game. The guy said they went 10 minutes without a field goal.
It was ugly. So, I felt bad. All the Arizona grads, of course, in the industry, and they could not have been happy.
You know, you get used to it. It usually happens in the second round. Is usually the spot that they go down. But that wasn't good. But I tell you, I was impressed by Alabama. I was impressed with them. I watched them in an earlier round game, but they just fight and fight and fight and fight.
The thing that I saw this morning, I think I was this morning, there's three of the Elite Eight teams that have got these long 2004, 19, Clemson since 1980, the long droughts, getting this far in the tournament. Anyway,
I already got a Roll Tide hat from Jennifer.
So that's right. She's in Alabama.
Yeah. Jennifer, so yes, wow. We got the hat. We got the Alabama hat on today. Just like I said, I was impressed with them. You got to give them credit. They were dating up and down, but at the end there, they showed some grit, and they did that early in an earlier game. So it was wild. So like I said, the South taken over the West, the Western deal. So there's four more games today, and starting to heat up a little bit. Yeah. It starts a little slow, but
that could throw a little bit of a twist into your pool too, right?
Well, you know, the big deal in my pool is if North Carolina State, they're the only big seed left. I mean, number wise, and if they go down, then it gets it'll get a little choppy. So we'll see what happens there.
Well, we're going to see if some of the high seeds go down at Gulfstream and at Oaklawn today. We'll look into these two terrific Derby cards. Let me start out with the Sirius 162 XM 207 Sports Zone 999, and at our website stevebeck.com. And here's another. Joe McKay is pushing Alabama on everybody too. We've got. I did not overload the lineup. I want to do some careful analysis with the lineup today. And Nick Tamaro will start us, get us going. Nick will certainly look at the cross country, which is the Excelsior at Aqueduct, and then the four stake sequence at Oaklawn. Scully will follow. We'll get his Kentucky Derby report after last week. Get some thoughts from him. See what's going on at Twin Spires as well. And, of course, it's Twin Spires weekend preview. And then we'll get his plays for the weekend. We'll go to Marcus Hirsch at the top of hour two, and we'll get Marcus's postscript to Fairgrounds, to the Louisiana Derby Day, and he'll give you the game plan, daily racing form game plan plays. But we also count on Marcus for the Dubai World Cup coverage as well. Most years, a lot of years, Marcus is there. So we'll get his take, and he's doing the write-ups at DRF.com. Then, I've got to think about this for a second. I'm drawing a blank, but Mike Welsh will be in, of course. We'll get Mike's take on the Gulfstream action. We'll get some clocker thoughts from him. We'll go to Oaklawn directly and talk to Jeff Taylor. We'll go up high above the building and get Jeff's takes as well. All right, so there's the basic transcript.
Let's do a quick reminder that we know that racing has been canceled tomorrow and Sunday, but there is racing today at Santa Anita.
It's a nice card too, actually.
Yeah. Printed. If you want to get your Santa Anita fix in, you better get it in today. But with the rain forecast hasn't moved, so it's
maintained.
They're talking 2-3 inches, and in today's world, that means cancellation. So no racing Saturday and Sunday here at Santa Anita. And Thursday had been added next week, and all those races will come back in some fashion, either on Thursday or during the weekend.
Well, and it should make for nice full fields through the, through.
Well, Saturday is the big day, weekend. And that's the one that counts. So that'll help that day. I think they had a couple races, maybe run 10 or 11 or 12 on that day. So, anyway, it is what it is. There was a time when we were worried, that it was going to be raining this morning, but it's not going to start till later on. And let me just get play in here about the job opening at University of Arizona. And on the school side, assistant professor Phil O'Hara has done that. Has been the assistant there for 4 or 5 years, done a great job, and stepping down. And Robert Hartman, of course, is the leader of the industry program there with the students, and also puts on the symposium. So there's a role open, assistant professor of practice, it's called. It's a full-time job. It's a you're a teacher, you're an administrator, you're a counselor. All kinds of things, but basically working directly with the students and teaching some classes there, and helping, like I said, put on the symposium. It's a pretty cool deal. I can say that from experience. I was called in for emergency duty about 5 years ago, and did that for a semester. And it's a very fulfilling job for someone who likes to do that and follow students around in their careers and teach them things. And if you want to use it either as a stepping stone or an ending stone, you get to meet a lot of people in the industry because of the symposium. You have to call them, talk to them, put panels together and things like that. So it's a very active job. I maybe 10 years ago I'd have taken it myself to do it. The salary is very... it's a pretty good salary, benefits full on, be working for the University of Arizona. So you have to, you can either get a hold of me at, DM me at, Away They Go in, Twitter land, X land, or poke around the University of Arizona website. And, you need to visit the University of Arizona career portal. So you're actually applying through the school. An opportunity for someone out there that they need to be experienced. This is an experienced position, or have a master's degree, which I think most of us will head to the experience side to go there. But anyway, it doesn't come up too often, and it's a good opportunity for someone to at least think about. And Tucson, believe me, is a pretty darn good place to live.
That, yeah.
You know, like I said, they asked me, what do you want to, do you think you want to do it? I said, no. I said, you know, no, I would, but, you know, all of a sudden I go in there, and then a couple of years later, you're going to be looking for someone else, you know, because I'm not going to stay, you know, anything I do now is not going to be terribly long term. So you might as well get someone that's, you know, plans on being there 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years, you know, and yeah, grow the position. But it is fun. I mean, when somebody, you say, well, yeah, I teach at the University of Arizona. What do you teach? Horse racing. It's like, what? It's a good conversation starter anyway.
I love it.
I will tell you that. In fact, you mentioned Nick. Nick had texted the other day and asked me, he had a suggestion for a panel idea. And he wanted to know who to get a hold of, and I sent him to Robert. So if you notice the last couple of years, there have been some kind of out-of-box panels rather than just the standard, you know, let's talk same old, same old, same old. And because they are open to do two-take suggestions, and I don't know what Nick had in mind, but it'll definitely be taken into consideration. And as we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years, the symposium has really taken off again, and it's become the place to be in December. So it's a good deal. Yesterday afternoon, I got a phone call from a buddy of mine. He said, you want to go play golf? And it was just going to be me and him. I said, yeah, right. And I play more than occasionally. And I learned something yesterday. Don't play afternoon golf. It's a total different deal.
You're an early morning guy.
No, it's just, it seems like golf is more serious in the morning. And somebody had mentioned that to me. Meaning in the afternoon, it's more play, let's just say people that don't play that often, and it's a little bit slower. And, you know, all I ask is for, you know, people to hit the ball, move along, hit the ball, move along. And, you know, you're out there with usually some friends and nice conversation, have some fun, maybe have a pop or two on the course. But when you go with just two people, you're at the mercy of the other two people that they match you with. And when you get a bad match, you know it right away, and it makes for a long day. In fact, it was so bad, I told my buddy after like 7 holes, I go, you want to get out of here after 9? I mean, let's go. Nope. So he wanted to keep playing. And, you know, the people in front were so slow. And anyway, it was a brutal, and someone was laughing, and they called it the afternoon golf. So it's like, you know, the serious players get there in the morning, and you know, even tennis or something's not crazy. But yeah, we started at 1:45, and it was a different deal. So afternoon golf, I'm going to stay away from.
Nick Tamaro, I think, is standing by. Nick.
Good morning, Steve.
How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
We're good. Hammer's with us, and he mentioned that you you're thinking up symposium topics.
I did. I had some ideas. I guess I had a moment of clarity, and so I solicited some info from Hammer. Good morning, Rick. And sent him on. So, you know, trying to think ahead, think for the future.
Yeah, I was just explaining. I said it's great that it seems over the last couple of years they've been open to suggestion and some, I don't want to call them out of the box panels, but they've seemed to be a little bit more progressive and a little bit not so just, you know, I want to say kind of boring and same old, same old. So whatever you are suggesting, I'm sure is will be a good one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to get us to scratch where it itches, right? Get to the topics that I think really, you know, could move the needle in the future. I think one of the things that plagues the racing industry is that everybody looks at everything through their lens and really just totally ignores any other angle or viewpoint. And, you know, that's a forum in which every angle should really be pursued. It should be analyzed and you know, collaboration is obviously better, and so there's clearly a number of things that can be addressed, and I think but trying to look at it in a productive and proactive way is obviously always best, and that can be done with some simple and targeted types of forums and seminars that can really, you know, kind of get at some core issues, and I still think that very much is a possibility.
I guess we're going to have to wait. Nick is clearly playing the cards close to the vest.
No, I don't want to. Like, I don't want to show up Robert Hartman and bring up these ideas that I sent him, and then he decides not to do the panels, and I look like a jerk that said, "Oh, I did this. They didn't listen." And blah blah blah. I have a wife and daughter, so I'm familiar with saying things and not get listened to all the time. So it doesn't bother me one bit, but. No, I mean, look, you know, one of the things that I've been pretty forthright about is marketing, you know, right? I mean, my professional background is in sales and marketing, and I think the racing industry has done sort of an embarrassingly bad job with marketing the sport, and that's clearly something that needs an overhaul. Because the problem, Stephen, you know, you were in sales, and hell, we're all in sales or customer service when push comes to shove, is that the reason why the sport is marketed poorly is because it just doesn't know what its core customer is. And the, you know, fully embracing who your core customer is and how you're going to try and convert new people to your game to becoming core customers is a huge part of having any kind of long-term success in business, right? I mean, somebody has to want your product. Somebody has to be your customer. You have to treat them nicely, you have to make their experience better. You have to give them an opportunity to return, and you know, you have to do all of those things while also not forsaking the people that are keeping your lights on. And I think that's been some of the challenge. So I would love to see a real conversation take place between people that have some of the ADW marketing background, people that have some of the, you know, larger event type of background, like somebody from the Breeders' Cup or, you know, people from CDI and things like that, and get all those people in a room and say, hey, you know, here's what we do when we think about how we want to market our event or our ADW or our, you know, racetrack, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I've only been to the symposium once. I've always viewed that as a great opportunity for that to take place, and hopefully they can get the right kind of groups of people together to really make that happen.
Well, and the one thing I'll say, you mentioned the core customer, and, you know, for the longest period of time, and in particular when the simulcast era and the OTB era commenced, there was this huge disconnect where, you know, the racetrack management, you know, Cognoscenti, didn't want to be associated with the player and with the gambler, quote unquote, and were embarrassed by that side of, you know, the endeavor. And you know, come on, that's more than a half a century now, and gambling and now of course sports gambling, it has proliferated to the extent that you can't be walking around with those blinders on. Now, I mean, it's shocking, actually, that this has to be reiterated at this late date. I mean, it's bizarre that we still have to have this conversation.
Well, I mean, look, I'm a pretty sick individual to begin with. You know that, and everybody else becoming more familiar with it that doesn't. So I was reading the minutes from the last Texas Racing Commission meeting the other day, and there a conversation took place about how the one of the topics that was being covered was basically being able to digitally transfer money from something into a wagering account if you're on track at one of the facilities in Texas where you can wager. And so the commissioners are talking about the various ways that it's being done, and they're basically talking about mobile wagering, and they're having a very difficult time understanding the concept of being on a Wi-Fi network and being able to place a wager. I'm not going to be an ageist and mock anybody for not understanding. It's okay. You know, some people are more technologically inclined than others. But one of them specifically says, the words came out of this racing commissioner's mouth, I am not interested in feeding somebody's gambling addiction. And it's like, well, there it is, right? We've summed it up. You believe that all gamblers are addicts, that they barely deserve any of your attention. And another commissioner said, well, I thought we were here to regulate racing with regards to riders and jockeys. I mean, I know gambling exists. it's like, right, well, if we just, you know, if we keep it quiet and we don't recognize it or acknowledge it, maybe it'll go away. Well, so too will the rest of the game if there's no gambling, right? And so, you know, that's part of the problem with the whole situation is that if you want to pretend that this is about fancy hats and fluffy dresses and top hats and bow ties and stuff like that, that's great. But if people aren't walking into facilities or logging onto ADWs and making bets, like, we're just going to continue to circle the drain, right? And I'm not a glass half empty guy. I'm a glass half full guy. I want to see how we maximize the opportunities that we still have. And I do think that that generation of people that is being marketed to poorly actually has a number of members of it that can be cultivated into long-term customers by being taught that this is a game of skill, that there are opportunities to take what's out there technologically and build on it, you know, and do all of those things. I don't see us being able to squander that opportunity because clearly the core customer is aging rapidly. And if we're not paying a particular amount of attention in terms of how we're going to get people in their 20s and 30s to become interested in this sport, which is very fertile for people in those age groups, then we're wasting our time.
Yeah, and, you know, the puzzle-solving mentality, the, you know, we had this this came up the other day, math clubs and, you know, that, you know, that type of individual.
Algorithms,
And anything involved in anything is connected to the phone. I mean, and even if you're at the track, they're betting on the phone. So
100%.
Right? So you got to connect it through that, and that's just the way it is. But getting them here is the main thing, or getting them involved. And if there's, you know, someone like you who's in the younger bracket has a line on how to attract that age group, then you know, we need to listen. And probably, like I said, you probably have a good idea. And it's not only listening, but it's the follow through that seems to be the problem in a lot of situations.
Nick Tamro, everybody. Yep. If ever there was a core customer that everybody has seen mature in front of their eyes, it's Nick.
Well, Nick is. I mean, for me, Nick Tamro. No one heard him. I just heard it was a name on the road. What you used to have on, but as I got to know him a little bit better, Nick has taken on, you know, kind of a jack of all trades role, and meaning he's interested in all parts of the game.
Yeah.
And to be able to talk about the game, you need to be interested. You have to at least have a working knowledge of everything that goes on. I mean, he announces, he does, you know, morning lines and marketing, and so when you start getting into that, you see the lack that is in the industry in those kind of places. So I appreciate Nick's contributions, and I think a lot of people do.
No, I appreciate that greatly, and yeah, I mean, you left out, of course, the second half of the jack of all trades part that definitely the personification of, right? I should remind everybody, Bad Morning Line hunting season opens on Monday when Keeneland draws their first card.
Sweet.
So there it is. You can be ready for it.
Well, Marcus is going to be on. Marcus is on at the top of the hour, so we could start with him.
He could warm up.
You can tell him that Elmer Fudd's got his shotgun ready. It's Bad Morning Line hunting season.
It's so Wazy Wabbit syndrome.
I will taunt everybody on Twitter about that on Monday. Can't wait. So,
so great.
But no, all kidding aside, it's been fun to get involved in a lot of different things. And when you're, you know, they sort of marvel at Sam Houston at the fact that I was a customer, and some people came into my booth last week on Texas Champions Day, and they said, you know, one of the employees there said, you know, Nick sat downstairs in the jockey club with his dad for 15 years, and we had no idea he was able to call races. And I said, quite honestly, I really wasn't sure I could either. But, you know, it was at least something that you gave me an opportunity to grow into, and I've tried to not squander it. So, yeah, it's been fun to take on the game from many different angles.
Nick, let's dive in. And you mentioned Texas Champions last weekend, but quick thoughts, observations from Louisiana Derby Day.
Yeah, you know, it was a pretty strong performance, I would say, from Catching Freedom, who, you know, that franks the form of Sierra Leone to an extent. And I feel like this Sierra Leone performance in the Bluegrass is really one of the more anticipated races of the spring, but we'll talk about that a lot more next week. But I thought he ran very well. I thought both of the fillies and the Fairgrounds Oaks ran well. They look like viable contenders for the Kentucky Oaks, and Catching Freedom to me looks like a totally viable Kentucky Derby contender. right? I mean, earning speed figures now in the upper 90s seems to be kind of where you have to be a contender. And I don't love his running style for the race, but I also think that I kind of take the opposite approach to it, because a lot of people get hasty in terms of, oh, you can't win from the Derby from back there. Well, you know, the last two Derby winners won it from back there. So I don't know if we're going to continue to see the trend that we've seen the last 2 years where the pace has heated up quite a bit, but I wouldn't spend a whole lot of time worrying about the pace being too slow for Catching Freedom. You know, he needs to be able to get himself into a decent kind of spot mid-race, and so that would be the biggest worry to me. But I thought he was solid. You know, I don't have any big lean against him. As far as the Jeff Ruby Stakes goes, I thought, you know, Michael McCarthy is one of the sharper trainers out there, and recognizing that Endlessly is a horse that likely wants to be on turf, you know, that's why Michael McCarthy is the kind of guy you want to give horses to. He's not going to run his horses in races that have certain names because he needs to be in there. He's going to run them where they can win. So hats off to him and the Connections for being prudent about that. Hopefully they're rewarded down the line.
All right. Let's turn our attention to this weekend. And I mentioned I figured the cross country would be a good place to start with you, and the Excelsior. This is a clever maneuver by Naira, you know, just taking the Excelsior and acknowledging the all-stakes pick four at Oaklawn.
Yeah. I will admit I spent the majority of my time looking at that Gulfstream, but that's also because they're running so many races. But yeah, this is a good, you know, it's a good sequence. It's these cross-country pick fives really provide a great opportunity on a daily basis, and you know, it's been fun to get involved in them a little bit. The Excelsior looks like the distance could end up being kind of a mitigating factor here, because I don't know who benefits as much going to a mile and an eighth of the principals in here. I feel like Messier is still very dangerous because of the speed he possesses, and I don't really know if Kinetic Sky is better at a mile and an eighth. I think he might be better shorter. I think that could also be said for probably for Quality Chick as well. So I thought Olympic Dreams and Messier were the horses that really excelled at a mile and an eighth, and I wanted to give them both their just due in this opportunity. So Kinetic Sky was 9-2 last time out. He was coming off that wide trip on a biased track. That was really when you were supposed to have him. You're not supposed to monkey around with him now coming back. So, you know, I'll give him an opportunity to kind of beat me and try and use those better priced horses who I think are just as viable in terms of being win candidates.
What do you do with Kuchar?
Yeah, you know, I don't quite know whether I feel confident that he can be a stakes horse again, but I will say Rudy's gotten him back into form, and he's arguably in the best form he's ever had. So, you know, no argument there. I think he's going to be a good price too. I imagine I haven't looked at the sheets yet for Aqua, but I imagine he looks pretty good on there, too. He had a pretty wide trip last time.
He does, and he's been, you know, it's not like he's jumped forward per se. He has stayed pretty much in line. He got back to the ones that he ran. You know, you look back to, back to, let me see, when was it? Turn the page. He got down to a two, actually, with that last start, and so, I mean, if he repeats that, he's in the neighborhood. But style-wise, he seems to be appropriate.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest angle, is that he does seem to have the right running style. He's got that, you know, outside stalking type of proclivity, which I think could really, really make him dangerous. So, no, I think he's a horse that you should probably use if you can afford to. He would obviously be a win candidate on paper. So, yeah, it's a pretty nice race to get the sequence started, no doubt about it.
All right, now quickly through the pick four at Oaklawn, and then we'll talk Gulfstream.
Yeah, I thought this Oaklawn mile was tough. I mean, I feel like we've been talking about Silver Prospector in these races at Oaklawn for 5 years, because we have. It was 4 years ago that he ran in the Southwest and won it on President's Day, and hell, they have a new date for the Southwest since then. So he's kind of worked his way back into form. You know, he's a good, consistent older horse that seems to fire every single time, and he'll get that good trip outside stalking. But I don't know. I thought the morning line was probably right in here. I think Dennington will be tough if he runs back to his better races. He's just been a more effective horse with Lasix, so I'm a little concerned about whether he can be effective without it. Kenny McPeak has bad numbers coming off of Lasix. I thought Midnight Rising was dangerous. I think Jordan Blair is underrated. I thought this horse really took a step forward in his last two starts, and I think he should get the same kind of trip that he has in both of those. So I would have picked him on top if I was making that kind of selection. I know you're a big Eddie Milligan fan, and he's bringing Last Samurai back off a layoff. You know, I don't really know why this horse should be 15-1, considering his worst performance last year was in the Whitney. I know he's off a layoff, but he's done his best work at Oaklawn, and he feels like a horse that, you know, if he's ready to go off the layoff, he's a totally, totally viable win candidate here.
You're not going to get an argument from me. What about Midnight Rising with that last?
Yeah, that's who I was saying. I like Jordan Blair. Yeah, comes off those two good races and looks like a good fit, no doubt about it.
Right. What is he? 7-2.
Yeah, 7-2 felt like a fair price.
You mentioned Last Samurai in a couple of years. Dallas had him. Dallas Stewart had him for a while, and Wayne took over and did great with him, and passing the baton to Eddie Milligan. So, but I agree with you. He loves Oaklawn, and it's a great price.
Eddie's had a tough meet. I hadn't noticed that.
Yeah.
1-for-25.
Yeah. Well, it's a hard place to win.
All right. The matron marks the return of Hoosier Philly. Andy and I were celebrating the big mare's return, the big filly's return.
Thank God, right? I mean, there's got to be a bigger takeout killer in racing than
Amos has been taking it on the chin on this show the last week or so. I threw him under the bus.
The good thing about Tom is he's very realistic about his horses. I mean, you know, and look, she's 15-1 on the morning line. She doesn't have much of a chance in here. 6 furlongs is never really going to be her game either. So, I mean, she's not nearly quick enough to get to the front in here. You know, I do think the speed in here is kind of phony in that I don't really think Daddy's Ruby is all that fast, but Zaitlos won't be that far off of it. Lilu is also a filly who's run well in pretty much any scenario. She's got some speed also, and I think Juan Hernandez getting on board coming in from California, he's going to ride her aggressively. So I thought one of those two chalky horses would win it, Lilu or Zaitlos. Zaitlos was very, very good last time out wearing down Backyard Money. But, you know, probably needs to take a step forward if Lilu fires one of her better shots. We'll see what Daddy's Ruby has to offer. I don't really think that was a historically great version of the La Brea, and she came back with a pretty poor effort against Calbreds. I feel like Peter Miller was sort of letting everybody know, like, hey, this filly may have won a grade one, but she's not a grade one horse by running her in races like that. And, you know, with a race like the Madison coming up next week, the fact that he's running her here at Oakland, I think, says about all you need to know.
Doesn't she have potential to be completely loose here?
Yeah, the thing is, she's really not that fast. So, I mean, she could get loose. I don't see why Lilu or Zaitlos wouldn't be ridden enough to make her work to get there. And I could also see them asking for more speed from Mucho Macho Girl. I mean, pace figure-wise, she's not that quick. And I also can't really imagine that Lucas wouldn't want Nick to ride Backyard Money a little bit out of the gate to keep her close also. God, he runs Backyard Money every 2 weeks. It's amazing. And to think that she's run twice since she lost to Zaitlos and ran arguably the best race of her career. But, yeah, I mean, I think they'll push her a little bit more. I will admit, I'm just not much of a Daddy's Ruby fan, and that might be the problem. The blinkers going on does get a little interesting because she might be a little bit sharper early. But, yeah, it'll be the opening quarter mile will really determine everything.
Well, and you mentioned Mucho Macho Girl. That race two back, that allowance win at Fairgrounds. And then look at what's gone on since the carousel with her. Look at how Dallas has drilled her three times, including that 47-1 bullet and then a 48-1 tightener in, you know, getting ready for this. Something tells me that she runs that A race again. And at 8-1, I think she's the fun price to include.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't have any argument with that at all.
One of the most interesting races of the weekend, with all the hubbub of the Derby preps, the Oaks side of things with the Fantasy, is maybe the most intriguing race of the day. I used it yesterday with Jeff Franklin for the Win Using Thoroughgraph segment, and I'm anxious for your take on this.
I mean, what a tough race, Steve. This is
right?
Like, how can you have any confidence in here at all? You know, the arguably one of the better horses in the race is still a maiden, is Valbrinker Hoff's Where's My Ring. So,
uh-huh.
I mean, she's not she's not far off at all by any means, and was a good second last out behind Kitza, who, you know, is one of the better three-year-old fillies out there. But you've got outsiders in here like, you know, Badia and probably even a horse like Capitanali that are going to be better than 10-1. I mean, they could easily win this race. And it feels a little foolish to just assume that Lemon Muffin is going to run back to her last, because that was a day where, you know, Wayne Lucas's horses were all running incredibly well. And I don't know. It just seems like a fool's errand to assume she's going to be as good. She's apparently been training very well. I don't know what kind of trip she's going to get from the far outside. You know, I would imagine Keith Asmussen will try and work his way over coming out of the gate and try and save a little bit of ground. But it feels like a tough spot for a horse with her profile. And, you know, and then you've got a favorite in My Main Squeeze that, you know, with all due respect to My Main Squeeze, she's a nice horse, but she's beating New York Breds. And I think this is a pretty significant jump in terms of class. Speed figure-wise, she's a very good fit. She looks like a horse that'll be extremely dangerous. So, you know, we'll see a little bit. I don't have a strong lean in here. I'm not going to be surprised if Torpedo Anna is ready off the layoff. She had a bit of a trip in the Goldenrod and still finished a good second. She obviously was very good in two starts prior to that. But, you know, I don't completely trust Kenny McPeak off a layoff with these kind of horses. And I think we've seen a long period of time where that, you know, is justified. I don't really have any. I would pick Where's My Ring. I would definitely use her in the cross country pick five, and probably go as wide as possible otherwise.
I want to bring up Michael Pewich's All Things Go, stretching out from 6 furlongs, and this is an aggressive move by Pewich, who is awfully clever and very capable, and sort of a you know, an under the radar guy. I know there's other speed here, but I mean, she's the one to catch.
Yeah, no doubt. She really is. She is the one to catch. I'm assuming Eclipse bought into her after that debut. They probably had an eye on running her here, but yes, our third place finishers already come back to win. There's clearly room for her to move forward. She's dangerous.
The fantasy then gives rise to the Arkansas Derby. There is a 13th, a good allowance actually afterward. So there's all stakes, you know, there's all stakes options, and then there's the option to go, you know, right into the last race as well. The pick five ends with the allowance. You know, Nick, this felt like a race that, you know, has got some very clear likely winners, and then, you know, some horses that have a look like they could nibble.
Yeah, I mean, the three win candidates are clear in Timberlake Moose and Mystic Dan. Everybody else is kind of trying to see, you know, which one of them stubs his toe whether they can beat the other two. So, you know, Moose is dangerous, obviously, but it's been an odd kind of campaign. I know Bob has a lot of horses. But for Muth to have been on the sidelines now for almost 90 days is a little strange. Clearly, with him pointing to one of the latter races in the Triple Crown, I guess it's somewhat by design, but Maymoon obviously popped up, and so did Nisos over time to really rise to the forefront. I think the horse that you're probably supposed to be most critical of those three is Mystic Dan, because it feels like he really benefited from the track profile last time. And, you know, I don't really think he was 8 lengths better than those horses. He's clearly shown he's got a lot of talent. But he was helped by being on the inside, and he kind of ran away on the lightning lane. I'm still a Timberlake fan. I don't have any big reason to be against him. But this is put up or shut up time. Like, this is it. He needs to take a step forward. He needs to run a high 90s buyer speed figure, if not 100, and show that he really wants every bit of this distance, because he's kind of hinted at it. But it's time to you know, stop tapping on the perimeter of the door and beat the thing down. And hopefully this is the time where he can do it. He seems versatile enough to be positioned pretty much anywhere early. And if that's the case, then I think he can be he'll be tough to beat here. So it'll be interesting to see how the first half mile or so shakes out. I do think Moose is very much capable of getting control of this race, or sitting just outside of Time for Truth. That actually doesn't really preclude him from being in control of it, so to speak, given that he'll be breathing down his neck. And that would give him an edge, so It'll be interesting to see where Flavian Pratt wants to put Timberlake in the first half mile, because he clearly doesn't want to be too far out and needs to take an opportunity to work him into position also.
What do you do with Liberal Arts? 15-1 and on a trajectory that, you know, that says he's a player.
Yeah, moving forward, you know, we're going to learn whether it's been wet tracks that have moved him forward or it's just maturity and development. He needs to be a little bit quicker to the punch. He's been troubled by slow paces, but he's an interesting horse, and he'll be a pretty big price. So I think he's intriguing, probably more of an underneath type than a winner, but I wouldn't really argue with anybody who wants to throw a couple bucks on him.
Well, and with Gaffleone getting back on him, Gaffleone rode him in his second start, and it's interesting to note that that was the one of his six tries, that was the one time he was up near the pace. And Gaffleone is probably more aware of the gears, you know, potential with him. I wouldn't be surprised if he sets up shop, you know, behind the speed.
Me either. I think that's actually a good angle and a good point. So I'm wondering if the connections had a bit of an eye on that as well. So Tyler's a guy that, you know, keep horses a little bit more in the mix if they need to be. And this looks like a horse that probably needs to be ridden a little bit early to get a good position.
Well, we're riding the Nick Tamaro train early here live at Santa Anita, where the next set of horses just came came cavalry charging out of the up the chute.
Well, you got to remember tomorrow and Saturday
the rain. Everybody's got to work.
The break, the second break, the first break just ended. So there was a good pile up here at the gap,
funny.
Waiting for the gates to open. And boy, they come. There's horses flying by here working.
You got, look at this three. Holy cow. Two pairs and then two individual horses. Six horses working within eight lengths of each other.
Here comes three more. Here comes another one. Because, you know, they all like to work on a fresh track. But believe me, the work tab today is going to be the biggest
expensive.
One of the year. Look at these pairs going by.
It's unbelievable. I mean, within 90 seconds of hitting the track. Nick, let's turn to Gulfstream and get your thoughts there. And I do have to mention, I saw Rich Averill's note. Feel terrible for Rich. Our Callie Kim forced not just to the sidelines, but she's been retired and will come out of the Orchid. And Rich was having a lot of fun with her, but he seems to come up with a good horse every year. So our Callie Kim comes out of the Orchid. Some thoughts, Nick, on the card.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, this is one of the more interesting situations we've seen in a Derby prep in years, because we have a potential Derby favorite, and we don't even know whether he's going to show up, right? I mean, we don't know really who he is. We've seen two different versions of him, one that's really good and one that's really not. So Fierceness is supposed to win tomorrow. There's no question about it. He is a lot better than those horses on his best day, but you can't help but be skeptical of whether we are going to get it. So he should get a good trip stalking the pace on the outside and be tough to beat from there. My inclination is to bet him over some of the later running types, the 4, 5, and 6 in the exacta. And we'll see if that, you know, is enough. But I think it's between, you've got a few horses on that card that are coming back either off of poor performances or off of layoffs and trying to figure out who they are and whether they're ready for big efforts in 6, 5 weeks or so. Is the biggest exercise, and that's kind of the case with Ways and Means as well. And the Gulfstream Park Oaks is coming back off a layoff. We haven't seen her since Labor Day weekend last year, and you know, I think we all want her to take a step forward and run well, and obviously be an Oaks contender because she was a good 2-year-old, and there's an opportunity for her to take a step forward as well. So yeah, it's a good card, fun card. Obviously, the million races running, and they're going to pay out the pick six on Sunday. So a lot of intrigue at Gulfstream this weekend.
Any other, you got a couple of other favorite opinions going into tomorrow there?
Yeah, 9th race, Dreaming of Kona, the 8. This is a horse I really like and what I'm looking forward to betting. So I think he's been disadvantaged by some troubled trips and being stuck inside a couple times recently. Now draws outside, should get a good trip. So he's kind of a price that I like. And stakes-wise, I thought they were a little chalky. You know, that's generally the case. I do think that the two Clément Chippens in the long-distance turf races are probably both going to be somewhat tough. There's been a lot of chatter about the 6 Mindframe in race 5, first-time starter, who's gotten a lot of accolades for his morning work. I like the 1 Rotterdam in race 4 quite a bit. I thought he ran well last time out, should get a really good trip from the inside. And I'm totally against Set in the Cutler Bay the third race. I wish I had somebody in there I liked a little bit more, but I'm going to pick the 6 Ari's Magic, who Todd's moving to the turf. Maybe he can improve being a half to Canthari, who won on the turf, but this is a bit of a give up move. But still, I want to be against Set wherever I can. So, pretty fun race. Of course, all my stuff will be on Twin Spires for the Gulfstream card, as they always are.
And finally, Nick, in that Oaks, I'm curious, where did you lean?
I picked Ways and Means. You know, her if she moves forward off of her 2-year-old form, she should be way too much for them. But I mean, obviously, there's reason to be skeptical. I think she's going to be a really short price, and I don't trust Gunsong to improve again against Stakes Company. But I do think in many ways, you know, if there wasn't Fierceness, obviously the most anticipated performance of the day would be Ways and Means by far.
Well, Nick Tamaro's visits are the anticipated performance of the morning. Nick, good luck this weekend. We will have Bluegrass, Wood, and Santa Anita Derby thoughts when we get together next week.
Sounds great, my friend. Safe travels.
Nick Tamaro, everybody, NTAM1215, a nice relaxed visit. Too often we got to jam Nick.
Yeah.
he seemed more.
And he can get a lot of words out quick.
Yes,
and
he can.
But that you understand him, right? He's not one of that. I'll tell you what. Talk about quick. And I've been here a long time.
I don't think you've ever seen.
Yeah, I don't admit as many of horses that came out biased, you know, jogging. They went right to the pole, and I'm going to tell you, we saw 40 works in a matter of 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And so what they're doing, boom, get them done, cool them up, right back to the barn, probably get on another one, and get this done because we're going to go 2 full days at least without works on the main track. Now, what that does, though, the Tapita track will now get its first
on the weekend. Authentic test, that's
yes.
A good point.
And I think they're going to allow the first time they're going to have breezes out there too. So, but they'd rather do it on the main track. But the load of horses that came out and that worked instantly, and now guess what? Look out there now, they're gone. This set is gone, and you'll see another set of them come out, and then at the next break we'll probably have the same deal. But. Got to get that work in. You know, it's California. You got to work.
Well, and with the big weekend ahead,
coming up, exactly.
You got to have it done. James Scully standing by, and Scully, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How's California treating you?
Not so bad. Hammer here too.
Good morning, Rick.
Hi, James. How are you? Always a pleasure. Yes, now we get the. I told you, it's time to get the pencils out, everybody.
Well,
Nick, we do. You got Nick and James. You better go get a pen.
Hey, well, Nick's a tough act to follow, but I'll try to do my best.
Well, James, the Kentucky Derby report, the long-running Brisnet Standard. Some thoughts about last week?
Yeah, the first 2 of 8 major qualifiers. We got 3 set this Saturday, 3 next Saturday. Took place last weekend. The Louisiana Derby, I thought Catching Freedom, you know, took a big step forward. You know, Smarty Jones win and 3rd in the Risen Star were solid performances. But I thought that was a really encouraging performance. And one where, you know, he gets sort of shut off. I mean, he does get shut off at the start and drops back to last. But I don't necessarily think he needs to be, like, in the back 5 of the Derby. I mean, I would think, ideally, he'd be sitting more like around 10th, 11th, or 12th and not leaving himself too much to do. But, you know, it's still a very powerful finish. I thought Honor Marie as well improved. You know, he got going way too late in the Risen Star and did run well, like, over the final, like, 8th of a mile that day. But in this race, he launched his move on the far turn and just got out-finished by the winner. He's more of a confirmed closer in my eyes than Catching Freedom is. But, they're both going to bring a strong closing kick to the Derby. You got a lot of late runners and stalkers that it seems, that are shaping up for this year's edition. I thought Tuscan Gold really ran well for his first stakes race to be 3rd. He was in there with the chance in deep stretch before he got passed by the top 2. You know, he'll be on the fence right now with 25 points. There's a bunch of horses that are sitting there tied with 25 points and might need some help. But you know, Track Phantom was dictating fractions. I didn't think the pace was that slow, though. I did think Catching Freedom, Common Defense was prompting him a little bit. And, you know, he's definitely got some distance limitations and questions about his overall quality. But I'll just point out, you know, he's the type of horse that I won't lose sight of if there isn't some, like, good speed horses that come out of these next two weekends. Because, I mean, and we'll see what happens with Joel Rosario if he gets another mount. But whoever's on Track Phantom, it seems like they got one shot and it's to get out on the front end and try to steal it.
You know, I didn't get into it with Andy the other day, but I didn't think that the pace was breakneck at all. And you know, you look at the chart and you think that it means, oh, it's the pace collapsed. I didn't really sense that. I mean, the pace was honest, but it didn't seem to me that it was a collapsing pace. I think those performed, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, he slowed it down some, but, I mean, he did go 23.49, and you'll see a lot of two-turn stakes there on the dirt, go 24 and change, you know, run a second slower. So it was a pretty solid. Like I said, he definitely had that Common Defense in Brian Hernandez. I thought they sort of were prompted him, and every time they got a little bit closer, Joel asked for just a little bit more to try to stay clear, and he hung in there until deep stretch. So, you know, I'm not, like, saying, you know, he's a top contender in my eyes. I just, you know, horses that have speed at this point are definitely, you know, I won't lose sight of the fact that the last 2 years have had this incredible pace duel meltdown, and we could get to the point where, if not this year, one of the years to come, some horse gets out there and they all leave him there by himself and he gets away with a real slow pace and has something left for the finish. So it doesn't necessarily have to shape up like it did the last 2 years, the Kentucky Derby, in my eyes. As far as the Jeff Ruby Stakes, Endless Leave, I thought took a huge step forward off the El Camino Real Derby. You know, he's set for a big season on the turf for Michael McCarthy, it looks like. West Saratoga, I thought, was extremely gritty to gut out that second-place effort. Mm-hmm. He likes Churchill, but he's never won at two turns. And, you know, looks a little bit on the numbers are a little bit slow. But, you know, he's not the type that, given the fact that he likes to race up in the, you know, right off the early leaders, you know, would be dismissed outright by me for, like, superfecta or trifecta bottom of those considerations. I mean, it's not out of the question to see a horse like that hit the board on May 4th. And I thought that Seize the Gray, he ran okay for third. He's in a little bit of better shape. There's like three or four horses tied with 25 points right now, but he had run fourth in the Iroquois last year, so he has 27 points, might be able to squeeze in the field for Lucas.
Hmm. All right, let's turn to the weekend, and before we get some analysis, what's going on the platform?
Yeah, we have, you know, we've been doing this Road to the Kentucky Derby 15% profit boost for winning Win, Exacta, Try, and Super Wagers. We're going to do that at Gulfstream and Park and Oakland Park. All eligible races, all races that have, like, at least five starters go to the gate will be, will be eligible for the profit boost at Gulfstream and Oakland. We'll also have the winner back promotion going this weekend, races at Oakland today, Maydan, Oakland, and Gulfstream on Saturday, and Gulfstream on Sunday. If your first win bet runs second or third, we'll give your money back up to $10. 15% win bonus at Turfway Park tonight. They got a big carryover in the late pick five, six-figure carryover there, and we always have that 10% last night of it tonight. Win bonus on Fridays at Turfway, and we have lots of other tracks and promotions available, so make sure you go to the offers page at twinspires.com and opt in.
Very good. All right, let's opt in on some action. Where do you want to start?
I'll start with Oakland Park. I do think, you know, there's a little bit more potential, at least, you know, in the non-derby preps there. And I'll just start early in the card, a couple races I liked, surprises. In race number three, it's a maiden special weight at 6 furlongs for three-year-olds. Number nine, Jester Sang, is listed at 8-1 on the morning, or I think it's 8-1 on the morning line in here. And he, improvement is expected the second time out from this Sunquoins Music colt. He got away absolutely dead last on March 18th. 11 of 11 runners, made up ground, was asked right after that slow start, got into mid-pack, steadily improved his position at every single call until weakening a little bit late, but was only beaten 4.5 lengths. He's got a 5 furlong bull. Well, he's got a sharp half mile drill in the interim for McLean Robertson. McLean Robertson has won 21 of his last 84 starts. The second time out, it's his best category right now in terms of the trainer stats. And I think that's just their saying. He also gets a positive jockey switch to Bayerano. And I look for him to move forward with the big effort in race three, number nine, Jester Sang.
8-1. Very nice for Mac and for Sambito Peru, Rafi Bayron.
They're not as good a price in race four, but I'm going to key this like number four, Trident Head. I just think he's set for a big effort. He likes Oaklawn. It's his second start back from a freshening. And I just thought this race lacks serious speed. I think he's going to be prominent from the start. I like to switch back to Gaffleone, who was up on him twice last fall, a nice win at Churchill and a runner-up effort at Keeneland. And I look for him to improve upon that fourth-place effort, his first time out at Oaklawn this season. I like him at second time out in race race four, number four, Trident Hit for Ron Moquette.
I've always been a fan of his. He's now 7, and it does seem like, Ron has had some issues, getting him going.
Hopefully he's back on track. It was an okay effort on an off track in that comeback, and one that I think, optimistic he will move forward off of it. In race number 7, I'll mention real quick, I'm not keen on the favorites in this race at all. I mean, number 1, Militant, is 9-5 for Brad Cox off of a maiden optional claimer. He was pretty well beaten in third that day, went off nearly 9-1, so was dead on the board, and now breaks from the rail. I thought Asmussen has an entry in here. Number 3, Rada Moon with Keith Asmussen at 6-1. Definitely, I think, a contender on the front end. I think he's going to show gate speed off of an encouraging effort last time where he showed improved speed. But I'll mention his other runner, number 10, Stroncino. He's listed at a huge price, 20-1. But he wasn't ready for the break in his career debut on February 24th. The horse that ran second in there is like, Jalen Run is a 3-1 second choice in the second race today on Saturday, and he had two gate works before, recent gate works before that debut. Stroncino did, so I wasn't surprised to see him break poorly from the starting gate. He really improved position nicely. He's got a chance to come back. He's worked a 5 furlong bullet work for Asmussen since that last start. And he's got Christian Torres, so he won't be 20-1 on the morning line, but he's got a shot in race 7, number 10, Stroncino.
Stroncino, all right. 10 in the 7th.
Yeah, and I'll just whip through the stakes real quick. And Oaklawn Mile, I did think, Midnight Rising, it's just going to take good form. I like horses like that. I've talked about in the past stepping up to stakes level and good form like that, or stepping back up to it. But I'll mention Last Samurai. I think this price just seems ridiculous. And, a mile seems too short, and he may need a race. But he ran so well at Oaklawn Park last year that if you're playing vertical exotics, then, I would definitely consider him. In the Matron Stakes, I think Zeitlos is just going real good, and she's eligible to get a good setup, and it's the filly to beat in my estimation. But I'm going to mention number 4, Mucho Macho Girl. She had two comfortable, easy runaway wins over soft fields at Fairgrounds. she stepped up and faced tough competition, and she was still in it with a chance at deep stretch last time before she weakened a little bit late. I thought that was a good effort for her in the carousel first stakes attempt. Got some, you know, got really necessary seasoning in a sense. And, I mean, just look how she's worked since then. She's got a half-mile bullet work and another fast half-mile work for Dallas Stewart, who was red hot last weekend at the fairgrounds. And I'll be using number four, Mucho Macho Girl, at 8-1 in my multi-race wagers in the major.
Yeah, I brought her up with Nick, too.
Yeah, and then in the fantasy, you know, my main squeeze has never been two turns. You know, I don't really understand making her the morning line. Those last three wins were convincing and were sharp and all, but they weren't overwhelming in my eyes. And I'm against her. I'll just mention on number 12, Torpedo Anna. I just think that's a tough post. I don't have a lot of confidence in her off of that non-threatening second. You know, in the Goldenrod. I'm going to use Lemon Muffin, and she's my second pick in there. I'm definitely not going to let her beat me. But I landed on Amos's horse, number six, Badia. And I just think she's sharp right now. It's coming on. I liked her debut win, three starts back at Fairgrounds. I thought she, you know, she just ran into a really good horse off of that maiden win, that Tarifa. That wasn't a terrible third place effort in that first allowance effort, and she improved off it really nicely in the off the turf Lacombe Memorial. So I'm going to give Badia a chance, to run well in the fantasy. She's my top pick, Steve.
Nice, and this has got to be a filly that Amos and Bill Stone have a design on the Woodbine Oaks. Ultimately, with her, she's an Ontario bred and. You know, she started her career on turf. She's an Uncle Mo out of a Bernardini mare. Very interesting. But winning the Black Cat keeps her on dirt for now. So Badia, and Nick had a little inkling about her as well. 12-1. So for you, 6-11 in the fantasy.
Correct. And then in the Arkansas Derby, I like Timberlake. I respect Moose. I think those are your two main contenders. If I'm playing vertical, I just think Timberlake, you're going to get time for truth, and Moose are going to go forward. He's got the tactical foot to just get, I think, in a perfect stalking trip just right off those early leaders. And, I expect him to move forward off of the Rebel for Brad Cox. If you're playing vertical exotics, two horses I would look at a price are, obviously Liberal Arts at 15-1. We'll see if he's at odds. But I thought Informed Patriot just did not fire last time, but I thought his third in the Smarty Jones two starts back was a little bit sneaky, and, I thought he was capable of perhaps, if you get a favorite or you get a couple of these horses that don't fire, he's got a little bit of a look for underneath at a price in the vertical exotics.
So 2-7 with a little 5-6.
Right. And then as far as Gulfstream, I'll mention a couple of earlier races before the three-year-old stakes. In race number seven, that's the Ghost Apper Stakes. This is the stakes debut for number eight, Donegal Forever. I like him to move forward off of his comeback effort in the slop. I loved his debut win last year where he stumbled out of the gate and looked like he was just like, in huge trouble that day. I love the way he finished. I thought he was of stakes, future stakes quality then. And I thought it was a pretty solid effort to beat Bourbon Resolve, who isn't the toughest horse, but he was in form, in a sense, placing in a couple of recent allowances. And I like him at 6-1 on the morning line, number 8 in the Ghost Zapper. And I'll pick a little bit of a price in the Sir Shackleton. I got number 7 Ticking at 15-1. I think it's an unimposing group, and I thought he was really in form last year at Gulfstream. He then ran on turf and synthetics, and he has moved forward in these last two efforts. So I'm going to take a shot with number 7 Ticking in the Sir Shackleton, number 7.
Well, boy, between you and Nick, a 7-8 exacta box of the 15-1 Ticking and the 12-1 Dreaming of Kona could be a very happy return.
He has the same idea as me. He's like looked at that race. He wants to take on the favorites in there, so that encourages me. I'm not going to try to beat Ways and Means. If I'm going to bet that race, I'm not sure about a mile and an eighth in the Kentucky Oaks if that's where she goes on and wins. But I do think she'll get two turns against that group. If I was to play straight exactas, I'd look to use a Power Squeeze, maybe number nine, Scalable, off of that fourth in the Ford Gal. And then in the fierceness race, I mean, to me, it's very rare to see a horse that's so well regarded, a champion two-year-old male, that coming into a final Derby prep where it seems like the start is so important for him. But that's the case with fierceness. But I'd like to see him win. I think he's going to be really tied on for this effort, and they've got him fully cranked. And, you know, I might be looking to take him on in the Derby if he does win. And the other thing I thought about the Florida Derby, Steve, was I don't like Hades on the stretch out to a mile and an eighth. Conquest Warriors races I thought were a little bit slow. The horse that intrigues me that I use underneath of fierceness is definitely number four, Grandmo the First, because I thought that was a big step forward last time in that Tampa Bay Derby, a little bit of a rough trip as well. And, he's got a little bit of upside for Victor Barboza, who's been pretty cold this meet.
Well, I talked about him yesterday too, Grandmo the First. There's plenty of employable prices to work around, no matter what your, whatever your referendum is on fierceness. So the race has got some intrigue. What did you do in the Phillies race in the Oaks?
The Gulfstream Oaks?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to use Ways and Means. I mean, I just thought that her races last year were brilliant. The thing with her, though, to me, I mean, you look at her pedigree, and you could just, like, look at her physically. I mean, she's, like, long and lanky looking, but, she had so much speed, I thought. I mean, she was so brilliantly fast in that debut win, and I thought that trouble trip cost her, extremely against a filly that was just very sharp that day in Brightwork. So I think she'll get the mile and a 16th distance. I'm not positive, like I said, about her going a mile and an eighth in big races coming up. But, it's interesting this year, that you look at a filly like her. I mean, all three of the upcoming big races for fillies, three-year-old fillies that are a mile and an eighth. I mean, no longer having that mile acorn. I thought that was like the biggest change of those distances at Saratoga, because you have the Oaks and the Black Eyed Susan at a mile and an eighth, and then that 1 mile acorn gave like fillies like Search Results and Gamin and others a chance to really show off their skills. So it's going to be a little bit more difficult this year going down furlongs at Saratoga and Acorn.
That's a fair point. What else you got?
Well, I was going to give you a horse that's going to scratch today at Aqueduct, but I figured I'd save you that having to text me and tell me once again it's scratch. We got this Turfway carryover tonight. I like that's races 3 through 8 at Turfway Park, late pick 5, six-figure carryover. Race number 7, Satisfied, is 6-1 on the morning line for Ferris Allen. Walter Rodriguez stays up. He got up to a little bit of a slow start and was like sort of stuck down in traffic on the rail. But I like the way he extricated himself from trouble and came running to finish second last time. I look for him to take a step forward off that race and run big in race 5. So number 7, Satisfied, 6-1 on the morning line, race 5 at Turfway tonight.
Very good, Turfway, and the carryover. And, of course, closing weekend at Turfway, I think I have the stake. Let me see. I do. I didn't get a chance to bring it up with Caitlin the other day, but the Serena's Song closes out the stakes schedule at Turfway, and they've had a very nice meet, and that's a pretty nice stake to close things.
Are you going to be at Keeneland? Are you at Keeneland next week?
I am not. I'm here at Santa Anita.
Okay, that makes sense. You're going to say for the Santa Anita Derby. I'll tell you this. I mean, we're going to see it tomorrow with Ways and Means coming back in the Gulfstream Park Oaks, and we got this Torpedo Anna coming back in the Fantasy, and then next Friday in the House of Bodies, we're going to get, it looks like, Just FYI and Candy coming back. So we got a bunch of classy juvenile fillies are just jumping into the mix like right now, and you know, they've got a shot to win the Oaks, you know, off of one prep with Malathat doing it just a couple of years ago.
James Scully, everybody. James underscore Scully 111. And, of course, all over twinspires.com with the analysis and the jury and everything else.
Thanks so much, Steve. Best of luck to you and Hammer this weekend.
James, I appreciate it. James Scully, everybody. And Marcus Hirsch is going to join us. And I'll tell you what, into some problems with poor Marcus.
Oh, phone wise?
No. He's under the weather, and
that's no good. So, looking at this Oakland car the other day, as I look, it's weird. Even still, I haven't been the racing guy here for a while, but you look at cards a little differently, and then overnight comes out, and you start checking on things. Steve Asmussen, Kenny McPeak, and Ron Marquette, they at least have one in every race. Between the three of them, they have 37 entries.
I saw that Steve was entered in all but one race tomorrow.
But and all of them. I mean, and these are big days, and this is not out of the ordinary. And Kenny McPeak, he's loaded this year, top to bottom, in every category, and he's in there. And Ron Marquette, you know, he knows where to point his horses for on the big days too. But it's just they came out running, and that's what they do there at Oaklawn. And another thing, you know, they run in the Oaklawn Mile. So this is fresh off last week when they ran the Essex. So that's two long races on the dirt for older horses that, you know, the category is lacking in top, you know, type horses. But the races have been put together with some really, really nice fields, coming off a 10-race Essex and come at this nice mile with 8 horses. A lot of good horses coming out of Oaklawn. When they close, these horses are going to disperse. We're going to see some nice races in those divisions, those grade 3s, grade 2s for the dirt horses going along. But kudos to Oaklawn to be able to run 18 horses in 2 stakes on the dirt long.
Well, they've also there's a stake today too, right? Today you've got the Temperance Hill, speaking of...
That's long.
It's a mile and a half. Marcus Hirsch is standing by. Marcus, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to connect, and I know we've got kind of a brief opportunity with you, and quick...
I'll talk fast.
Quick recap of last week. We didn't get a chance to preview it, but it was certainly a fabulous afternoon at the Fairgrounds to help close out the season.
I think so. I think it was pretty good. I think we might, not impossible, we saw the Turf Classic winner, the Oaks winner, maybe even the Derby winner. Who knows? I would say less sanguine about the Derby winner, but I think Tarifa is a leading Oaks contender, and I'm Very Busy was absolutely fabulous.
And clearly, you know, is especially in Chad Brown's hands, you know, a dangerous commodity going forward as the season unfolds.
He's a beautiful horse. I've never seen him. He looks pretty special.
Go down the chart in the Louisiana Derby, and I also want to ask you the same question I kind of touched on with Scully just minutes ago. Did you think it was a collapse scenario that the pace, you know, was a setup for the deep closers? I know they came running, but I didn't think it was a breakneck pace.
No, not at all. I mean, the wind was definitely a factor on Saturday. And obviously, that's only 1 3/16 miles late to run all year. Well, maybe not obviously, but it is. So, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to judge the fractions. I don't think they went especially fast. I think I would call it a moderate pace. I don't think there's any reason this does a fall apart race, in my opinion.
I agree. I think the exact you know, pair was really good. And
they were really good. And I thought Tuscan Gold was really good.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
I mean, I don't know how much time he'll have to grow and learn and improve, because he doesn't need to do that. But he's a specimen, and he was very brave. And I didn't see any numbers besides the buyers, but he lost a ton of ground on both turns. I haven't read anything about what their plans are for him. Is there an update that you can provide me?
Not per se, but isn't he tracking on the Chad Brown Preakness path?
That was the other horse.
Oh, that's
the
right.
Fourth horse. His name I can't remember. But not Sierra Leone, not the Tampa Bay Derby runner-up domestic product. That's it. They got that one. And not Tuscan Gold, the other horse.
I know who you mean,
which is not. I can't remember the name. I know that he told Dave Brenning that, you know, that's his Preakness horse, and he's not going to rush him to the Derby. And I'm not. That's not to say this couldn't be a Preakness horse. Maybe his Belmont horse. I don't know. I just wonder if. What did he get there? 25 points. I mean, that's going to set him down below 20 for the Derby. So I don't know what you do. You kind of push him back to get in. Is he not ready for that? It'll be interesting.
Honor Marie has wormed his way into my affections.
He's a fine horse. I mean, I was really what impressed me as much as anything. Well, obviously his race, but he was. I thought he was one of the more professional horses in the lead up. It was quite a crowded day, and the paddock is a crush of people in it there at Fairgrounds. And I noticed that he, while definitely engaged psychologically, was not. He kept his composure. He had just a kind of mad race, but not ideal preparation. You know, in the Risen Star, nice step forward here. Obviously, Churchill in the fall is not the same as Churchill in the spring, but he does have a very good win over the surface. He's a horse who could be peaking third time out. I think he'll stay. He lost, but I think that maybe the other horse is a little bit readier to win for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. People are not going to like the way either one of those horses train, so just forget about that. Neither one of them moves beautifully, and they are not impressive workhorses, but doesn't matter.
Let's shift gears, and got to do two things with you. We've got to do some game plan, and you got an interesting troika of selections, and then I need your Dubai World Cup thoughts going into tomorrow morning.
All right, what do you want to start with? Lead me. I'm here to be led.
Do the World Cup. Let's get the World Cup in, and because we've only kind of just touched on you know the principles who's entered,
really?
And I haven't. I mean, I don't give it a whole lot of attention, but you know, many years you're there.
This year I'm not.
You're not, but you made up for it in New Orleans.
I'm pleased that I'm not there because that would have been too much traveling.
I would think.
I think it's top to bottom. It's one of the better ones recently. To keep it relatively brief, I think Senior Buscador last race was the race. I did not expect him to run as well, around two turns in a mile and a quarter, especially after the best race of his life. This is no secret, but it's one of the two. Dirmasotagake, I think. He should improve, and he should be better value, but I don't know. Is he really the horse to go out and win? Maybe. Ushpachasoro, he really should be set up to run just as well as he did last year, but he's going to have to. These are better horses than Algiers, who is the runner-up. And I seriously believe that the amazing Kabir Khan can win this race. And I'm sure your listeners, being racing aficionados, are all up to date on this impossible story of this horse. In case they're not, a $12,000 California Chrome, who looks a lot like California Chrome, was purchased by Kazakh interests, went to Kazakhstan, ran his debut in Kazakhstan, was purchased after that race by the current owner, ran twice more in Kazakhstan, and then graduated to the big time, Russia. Ran five times in Russia. He actually lost their major derby there. They have multiple derbies, as many derbies as he won in Russia. But the horse he lost to was pretty good, ended up in Dubai too, with the same trainer, Doug Watson. And this horse, he looks like he has, I mean, he's going to be tested, obviously. The horse he beat in the, well, Clapton is a decent horse. He crushed him. The Al Maktoum Challenge in January was an excellent race. He was intentionally held out of anything subsequent to that. I was sent video of a couple of his main works at Maidan. I thought they were fabulous. He has tracking speed. I think he'll stay. Doug Watson, for people who don't follow Dubai, was an American, worked for... He's an American expat, worked for Kira McLaughlin, been in Dubai forever, has had many of the, like, non-Godolphin best horses in Dubai. He makes his horses special. I agree.
Well, the World Cup tomorrow night,
the turf races are fabulous. I mean, people should take a look at those. The Dubai Turf and the Shima Classic. I'll give you brief opinions on those. The Shima Classic has August Rodin, who I think will be the strong favorite in American betting. I do not believe that horse has to win this race. Liberty Island, a four-year-old Japanese filly, will be considered, I think, the main competition. Emily Upjohn, I think, is going to outrun her odds in this race. She's a very, very, very much a firm ground horse. At her top, going a mile and a half in firm ground, she beat Westover, who is an excellent horse, second in the Shima Classic, to the Great Equinox last summer in England. I think she'll be overlooked. On the other hand, Aidan O'Brien in the Dubai Turf has a horse named Luxembourg, who I think has got a great chance to win. He was just fourth as the overwhelming favorite in Saudi Arabia last month. I have to believe that they were trying for the $5 million race, not the $2 million race, and it was odd to me that he even showed up there. I think it was purely a prep. He runs back to his Hong Kong Cup, where he's beaten the nose by the great romantic warrior. He'll be a handful.
Well, and he could be a decent price, too, no?
That's why I mentioned it.
There you go. And then, of course, you got the sprints, the turf, the Alquaz, and the Golden Shaheen and the UAE
Golden
Derby.
Golden Shaheen, I like Run Classic.
Run Classic? All right.
Be a price there, too.
Nice. All right.
There you go. For four. Take me later.
Marcus, let's dive into the game plan. And Mike Smith is going to join us in about 4 or 5 minutes.
You can push him back for me, Steve. Come on.
He's got a workout to do.
Who do you like in the Florida Derby?
Who do I like in the Florida Derby?
Hurry, you got Mike Smith coming. No hemming and hawing.
I'd like to see Hades. I think he's going to be an overlay, and I'd like to see him win.
Yeah. I fell hard for Hades for a couple of days after I finally got down and dirty with him. In a nutshell, I will not be surprised if Fierceness runs one of his best races and wins.
Right.
I don't think he can play the horse. Go ahead and play him. He's terrible value, and we know what he is. He has his deficiencies. He struggles when things don't go his way. And Hades he beat the tar out of him last time. Hades, you know, this horse is, like, he seems to know what he's doing. He has a real intention in what he does. His workouts that I've seen have just been staggering. He finishes so fast. He's very kind. He's been on the lead. He doesn't have to have the lead, I don't think, at all. No. I think he has another level to find, and I agree with you. I think he's a value. I think Hung Warrior is going to get that a lot and be second choice. And there you go. Hades for me, too. We're going to hell together.
In a handbasket. And it's Easter, so how appropriate.
Oh, my God. Yeah. See you there.
I see you included the fantasy, which I've been hawking all week as maybe Saturday's best race. Who do I like in the final analysis? I mean, to me, my main squeeze is the horse to beat. I hated that she got sniffed out as the favorite.
Pratt, William Pratt.
I guess, right?
Maybe.
So then from a price standpoint, you know, I, as crazy as it seems, let me go back to my other page here. That's Friday. I'm intrigued. I must admit, I'm intrigued by Michael Puich's second timer.
Yeah, that's one of those why is the horse in here things, right? Like,
yes.
This guy's not an idiot.
Exactly. And he's no idiot. Puich is very clever.
Yeah, I think just my take on it. I think Timberlake would be tough in the Arkansas Derby. That's my
right.
Secret. So I didn't want to go there. But I do think all the shorter price here, including the New York Red you mentioned, who drew the rail and stretching out to two turns. Maybe she's not good. We'll see. I thought all the favorites were vulnerable. I think it could pay to go price shopping. You've landed on All Things Go. I landed on Body. Yeah, I think that horse is. Maybe she's not that good. I think she's way better than it looks superficially. The four horse field's going to be held against her. The third, the understable mate in the Tarifa allowance race. That really did not work for 18 days before that, at least according to the official works, and had a very light training schedule. I don't think she was in any way meant to win that race. And if you want to play jockeyologist, Morales is Ames' first rider, and he rode the runner-up. Well, Lannery was on this horse, and then switched over to Body for the off-turf Lacombe. I haven't talked to Ames. I don't know. I would suspect that they might have had this race in mind when they put her in that in the Lacombe 3 and off-turf. Maybe not. Maybe she just ran well enough to say we'll give it a shot, but I think she's very progressive. And then the other race was the Orchid, and I made that. I looked at that before I knew our Callie Kim was coming out, so that's take some of the starch out of the price that I was hoping for on the French import La Mejana for Clement. The division to me, like there's the same bunch of horses for the most part, and I think this filly is no superstar. She's gone a mile and three quarters. She's not like some huge turn of foot horse, but she does have a little bit of pace, and she does have a decent finish, and she's run against some solid competition. I have to think that she's done well enough over here to make this race. She's a firmer ground horse. So, people may hold her heavy and soft ground flop against her more than they should. I thought she could be a touch of value.
Marcus Hirsch, everybody. DRF Hirsch. Marcus, I appreciate it. And we will check in next week on a very big Bluegrass Santa Anita Derby Wood Memorial.
Where are you going to
be? I will be right here at Santa Anita, and in fact, Mike Smith standing here. And I guess the question should come up: have you won all three? The Wood, the Bluegrass, and the Santa Anita. Obviously, Santa Anita Derby, Bluegrass is in Woods.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
At some point, yeah.
This is Mike Smith. This is one of my favorite people
right?
in the whole game. He was champion in New York in Gulfstream. California, he's conquered the world.
He's
standing down there next to John Sheriffs, and what a team you guys were, and piloted one of my favorite all-time horses, where there's a little article I see in the paper, Holy Bull at Monmouth Park. And
he actually won the Bluegrass.
Yes, he did.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
We've been blessed to have won all three of them, actually, several times.
But I couldn't help it. I haven't seen Mike in a while here, but... every racetrack that seems like I've been at, and Mike's been at, and win races. And I always think of you at the Gulfstream meet back in the 90s when that was not only best riders I've ever seen, but any day at any time, you never knew who was going to come out on the racetrack and win.
Oh,
be
without
a star.
A doubt, man. There was some just monsters back then at that, back in the 90s at Gulfstream, man. There was some really, really top horses that would run there, and of course, top trainers and riders as well. But anyway, no, everything's good. I'm looking forward to watching these last prep races that are coming up tomorrow with the Arkansas Derby and, of course, in New York. And then you're going to have Bluegrass coming up. And then we have Santa Anita Derby coming up next week as well. So going to be some great, great races.
What do you talk about? You're out here. You're doing some, getting on a few?
Getting on a few, yeah. We're just a little slow right now, but just waiting for that one real good horse to come around again. That one good horse takes you to a lot of a a lot of places, you know. So we're just kind of waiting on that right now. We'll see what happens.
You're on one today, right, for Gary Mandela. That nice Better Than Gold.
Yeah, nice colt. First time on grass by Nyquist, which a lot of them, you know, they run on grass pretty well. If he takes to the grass, he's training exceptionally well, so he should run real good.
How much do you want to ride at this point? I mean, are you...
Well, any good horse in every good race. I'm not looking to ride, every race every day,
yeah.
But, it'd be nice to ride two or three a day. You know, that's kind of where I'm at right now, is what I'm trying to do, and just kind of ride your quality over quantity. Nice young horses, especially these two-year-olds, are going to start running here pretty soon. I always get excited about the two-year-olds. I love riding a two-year-old, so maybe we'll get some new business coming up.
Well, speaking of babies that are coming along, one of your Santa Anita Derby Honor AP's babies.
We'll start running this year, so hopefully right off out of the gate, he'll throw some runners, man. He's a beautiful horse, had a lot of talent, is well-bred. We'd love to see his babies just take right on off running, man.
Right.
Get him going as a sire anyway.
You know, it's funny. You're going to make me think of a conversation we had in front of Wagner's.
Well, that had to be many years ago.
Well, you'd come back from here after the last work for Giacomo. And you told me, we were both waiting for it to open. And you said Giacomo was really the first holy bull that reminded you, when you were on him, that reminded you of Holy Bull.
Yeah, he didn't have his running style, but he looked a lot like him and he acted like him. He was a big, good-looking colt and a tough, strong horse, you know, and Holy Bull was a tough, strong horse. But Holy Bull was a whole lot, his daddy was a whole lot quicker than he was. But, you know, I really think, especially back then, you know, Mr. Hershey's, these West Coast racetracks really didn't suit him, Giacomo, that well. I think he would have probably been a whole lot better horse back in the East. It was so speed favoring back then, and he came from so far out of it that he'd finished second, third in all the major preps and all the stakes. I think if he'd have been back East, man, he'd have had a better career.
I think you're right. Because didn't he finish fourth in the – I think he finished fourth in the San Diego Derby, right?
I believe he did. Third or fourth,
Third and fourth.
But finishing strong,
right.
You know?
The perfect what you were looking for. He's going in the right direction down the stretch.
Buzzards Bay, General John B.,
mm-hmm.
Wilco, and Giacomo were the 1, 2, 3, 4 out of that Santa Anita Derby.
I remember that.
And General John B. might have been, there's no telling. He ended up getting hurt. That was Roger Stein.
Roger Stein, because that was right in the middle with Jeff Mullins won three derbies in a row. Three Santa Anita derbies in a row, which is pretty wild.
Oh, wow.
Right? Remember
really
that?
Really wild, yeah.
Well, yeah.
It's hard to do.
Buzzards Bay and Wilco, I think, were sixth and fourth in the Derby.
Yeah.
I mean,
they ran respectively well. It was a fun race, and we always knew that going a mile and a quarter would certainly suit him. And it did.
Holy Bull couldn't do, or didn't do. I didn't say couldn't do.
He redeemed the Derby.
He
redeemed his father's Derby anyway.
Yeah, and I bring that up because, you know, when you get these justifies to ride and you know, the honor at P's are going to come, you have to be in tune to think to yourself, you know, does this one feel like, you know, like the dam?
Well,
or the dam?
You know, between, you know, Justify, of course, Justify was just phenomenal as, you
right.
know, even starting out late as he did, you knew right away when you saw him that he was just different. And of course he went on to prove he was if very few horses, if any, has ever done what he's done, you know. So, but anyway, well, listen, guys, I got to get to work, man. Them tractors are out there, so I'll talk to you all soon, man.
Get a picture.
I'll get a picture of the two of you for the listing. There we go. Nice. There it is.
Thanks, Mike.
Mike Smith, everybody.
Okay.
How do you?
You don't. When
how
I
do
saw
you turn that down.
Down there, went down and said, always has the same smile, same personality, friendly. Just seriously. If you had to pick, you know, you work in a game and you see trainers and jockeys and owners, and you obviously you don't connect with them and you don't really need to or want to. But when he came to Monmouth Park back in the 90s to ride Holy Bull, and he rode a lot of shug horses back then, he rode Inside Information in the Molly Pitcher. he would come, and it just was always, you know, friendly type of guy. And then when I went to Florida, he was down there. He was at the same gym we were with, Premier gym that I think is still there. And he would show up there. And then I come to California, and he came out here to California. And I can just, you know, you mentioned the Justifies, Zenyattas, the Holy Bulls, just horse after horse after horse. And always the same demeanor that you saw him here that he was 20, 30 years ago. So just a great guy and a truly good rider. And you could see how fit he is. And we were talking about that. He does more gym work than he does hiking up in the mountains, which he used to do. But super guy. Great. And we saw him go by, so we got to get 5 minutes. I knew he said he had to go, probably get back and, you know, get on a, probably getting ready to get on a horse to come out here for the second break. But those reminds me of the old days when we did, at least my part of the show was in the afternoon more, and more from my office and outside, but I would just see people come by the office and we would grab them.
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
The impromptu interview, and couldn't let Hall of Famer go by.
Well, and I wanted to dig up. Hello.
Little visitor.
Well, he's angling. There's a bird, and he's angling
oh,
for your donut.
Oh gosh,
you left that donut.
That's a rookie mistake. And you can't do that in
that's
the golf
great.
Cart either. The squirrels will get you.
That's great.
That's pretty funny.
He just swooped it. That's an interesting.
That was a reconnaissance mission. Next one will come in and he'll nail it.
I love it. I wanted to garner the wood and the bluegrass winners, beside obviously the Saint Denis Derby winners, including Justify and Honor AP immediately came. But there's a couple. Actually, I'm just looking at the wood. There's a couple that I absolutely would have forgotten about, including 36 Red. 36 Red with Nick. How about that? Devil Is Due for
Jerkins.
Chief. Yep. Unbridled Song. Unbridled Song. In fact, just looking at this.
That was Jimmy Ryerson. And,
of course.
Yes.
Absolutely. Before Alexander Haig swept in and decided he was in charge.
That's pretty funny. Now, if you want to look back, if you want to go back, you talk about Devil Is Due. Look at the 94 Woodward, which is a race that Holy Bull won, and our contingent came up from Monmouth there to watch that race, and he dominated that race, and it was New Jersey against New York in our eyes. And look at the field that he beat there. He beat the Derby winner, Gopher Jen. He beat Devil Is Due. Are you pulling up that chart?
I can't.
Pull that chart up. But it's funny because there's a little, wasn't there a little deal in the form or somewhere recently where we're talking about the Holy Bull? And boy.
When they ran the Holy Bull.
Is that when it was?
Yeah.
And so Holy Bull was the first horse that I ever saw, like at Monmouth Park. Mr. Kroll obviously trained the horse. And in the morning, whatever time in the morning he decided to step on the track, when that horse took one step on the track, everyone knew it. And everything would just come to a stop. And they would just let him do his thing, and everybody would just kind of watch him. Even if he was just out for a little jog. It was the wildest thing, because everybody knew that was our horse.
You know what's funny? The Devil Is Due is absolutely a profile horse for my Horse the Time Forgot series. 41 starts, 11 wins, 12 seconds against the best competition, and 3/3 for just under $4 million. And he's rarely brought up from that, right? From that era?
Oh, he was a good, is that a hobo horse?
This was actually, I don't think it was Dreyfus. It was, Peter Blum bred him.
So then, no.
Lioncrest.
Okay.
Lioncrest.
He was one of a back, we're talking, 94, 95-ish. just one of a lot of good horses back then.
That if they were running today, people would be falling over themselves to see him. Smith, 3 Wood Memorials in 7 years in that stretch between 1990 and 1996. How about that?
Yeah. Was winning everything.
Yeah, you look through his list of stake winners. It's just unbelievable. Really unbelievable. Let's do this. We should take the break right here while we have an opening. All right. Let's do that. Brian, let's take a break here, and we'll come back with the second half. We're actually 10 minutes. We're actually not in bad shape. Mike Welsh is going to join us in a little bit. We're going to go to Oaklawn. We'll talk to Jeff Taylor and get his Oaklawn opinions, focus in on the stakes. I should mention, too, I said that there's the Temperance Hill today. There's also a pair of stakes at Sunland that for the New Mexico Breds. They've got the Breeders, New Mexico Breeders Derby, New Mexico Breeders Oaks. Fincher looks tough in the Oaks. 7 horse fields, Sunland today in $250,000 stakes. Let's take a break. We're live at Santa Anita, looking eastward toward Gulfstream and sort of southeastern toward Hot Springs. Back after this, second half, Twin Spires weekend preview.